Hello, this is Tamara, reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, February 25th. Let's start with the front page. From Tony Reed in Decatur, his article is entitled, Low Water Brings Rising Concern, Lake Decatur. Latest drought, making a play for history book status. The lack of water in Lake Decatur is now so severe it looks like it has suddenly become a tidal waterway, and the ebbing tide has gone way, way out. Boat docks are left standing high and dry, and a spreading band of mud stretches between the water that remains and the increasingly distant shoreline. The default temperament of Decatur's water production manager, Robert Whale, is to remain calm and unruffled. But his concern level is rising as that water level keeps falling. We've had lake levels dropping since the beginning of August, he told the Herald and Review. It's pretty much down, 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 and while it's not dropping as quickly as it was prior to November, it's a steady decline. He said the current drought isn't the worst on record. The century-old lake saw its worst droughts in 1931 and 1953, but Whale said this current dry spell is going to get noted in the history books. I mean, this will go down as what we call a drought of record, he said. You know, something that we refer back to and say, that was a bad one. In mid-February, the lake was at its lowest point for 40 years, at 608.5 feet, off nearly 4 feet from its normal average at this time of the year. Just how bad is it going to get? Rain this past week offered a welcome shift in the weather, but then the forecast reverts back to being rainless for most of the next week. It's now a familiar pattern. The growing dryness of the lake was a major topic of concern at the latest Decatur City Council meeting, and Councilman David Horn said Decatur residents are getting nervous about the future. I've received a lot of feedback, particularly from residents who are concerned about the heavy use of water by industry and concerned whether residents will have drinking water for their day-to-day lives, Horn told Whale's boss, City Director of Public Works Matt Newell. The director told him we're not talking about water rationing yet, but there was a need to keep all responses under review. Industries that draw from the lake are already responding to the looming crisis, with Archer Daniels Midland's company tapping into their own wells to reduce demand on the city's key water resource. Other potential future measures include asking industrial users to cut back in an escalating series of restrictions to ease the drain on the lake. And the city, meanwhile, is tapping other water resources, ranging from a nearby gravel pit to emergency wells in DeWitt County. Probably the lake would be 1 or 2 feet lower right now if we had not used those supplies, Whale said. And looking to the immediate future, he said the priority was to try and navigate through the drought while preserving crucial industries and the jobs and livelihoods that go with them that rely on the lake's waters. And we're working on strategies to do that, he added. Strategic move that got the green light at the council meeting was a unanimous vote to pay $50,000 to a company called Interra Incorporated to provide the city with drought support services. The specialist firm has served as Decatur's water resource and drought resilience advisors since 2018. A previous report is drafted on reducing drought risk. It was cited by Whale as an excellent guide that has already helped improve Lake Decatur's drought resiliency. Their experts really understand water and water resources, and I trust this team, Whale said. Interra's brief will include evaluating short-term water supply solutions, evaluating the effectiveness and need for mandatory water use restrictions, and drafting a battle plan for the road ahead. That plan will cover working with city staff and area industries to recommend the trigger levels for further drought responses. In the meantime, one advantage of a draining lake is it shows what's in it and where. Whale said he plans to have a series of drone overflights to make a record of how the lake bed looks. And junk objects that could be navigational hazards in wetter times, for example, can be targeted and fished out to make life safer for boaters and water users. The water production manager still hopes and believes he has only a limited time to get all this done because he ultimately has faith Mother Nature will yet cascade in and come to the lake's rescue. I've checked in again with our state climatologist, Trent Ford, and the long-term forecast is still favorable, he said. Mr. Ford looked back over 75 years' precipitation. And he said there's a 95% chance that we'll get more than 7 inches of rain in the next 3 months. Now, we don't know exactly whether that would fill the lake up or not, but it would certainly get us through this crisis. Back at the council meeting, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf encouraged her citizens to beseech divine intervention. I would encourage people to pray harder, because we need that rain, and we need a lot of it, for many, many days, she said. Now from page A3, Scott Perry in Decatur. Boy, 3, dies in Decatur house fire. GoFundMe donations sought to house family. A 3-year-old boy pulled from a burning Decatur home has died. Sangamon County Coroner Jim Allman said the boy died Friday in the pediatric intensive care unit at St. John's Children's Hospital. According to a GoFundMe page created by a family member, a second person pulled from the fire is still undergoing treatment for severe trauma and burns at a Rockford hospital. The GoFundMe page is seeking donations to assist the West family with new housing and medical expenses. We're currently looking for a new home, said family member Early West, but we only want to accept what we can use. For more information on what the family needs, visit the GoFundMe page contact. Decatur Fire Department crews were dispatched the morning of February 17th to a home in the 1500 block of East Vanderhoof Street. According to a news release, a passerby reported smoke coming from the home. The fire remains under investigation. Again from Scott Perry. Decatur Police. ISP reviews death in DPD custody. Illinois State Police are investigating the death of an individual that occurred Monday during a welfare check by Decatur Police. Police Chief Brad Allen said in a news release that officers were called to a Decatur home at approximately 11:08 p.m. to check on an individual reported to be in distress. The news release said officers located the individual and spent a significant amount of time engaging in conversation to de-escalate the situation and provide appropriate assistance. Abbott Ambulance was called to the scene to provide medical aid if needed. During the encounter, officers determined that the individual required medical attention and took the individual into non-arrest police custody to facilitate transport to the hospital. The individual resisted officers' efforts, and force was used to overcome the resistance. After being detained, the release said the individual began exhibiting signs of respiratory distress, and medical personnel initiated resuscitative efforts. The individual was transported to a local hospital, where he was later pronounced deceased. As required, the Illinois State Police were called in to conduct an independent investigation. From our live page, Donette Beckett, Decatur. Foreigner set to rock the Devon. The classic rock band Foreigner has been added to the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater list of headlining acts. Foreigner, along with special guest Goodbye June, will be on stage August 4th at the Nelson Park venue. Tickets range from $69 to $119 and will be available beginning 10 a.m. Friday, February 27th at devonamphitheater.com. The show is not included in the 2026 Devon season ticket package. However, special packages such as gold at $969.50, silver at $419, and bronze at $254 will be available. Reserve seating, merchandise packs, and early entrance into the venue are part of the packages. Additional fees may be added. The English-American band's first hit, Feels Like the First Time, introduced the group to radio listeners in 1977. Later songs, including Cold as Ice, Hot-Blooded, and Urgent, would cement the band in rock history. In 2024, the band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For more information on the Devon Amphitheater's list of concerts, visit the venue's website or Facebook page. Now from our opinion page, our topic is Trump's Second Act. From John Fredericks, GOP president is making Main Street boom again. Fredericks is the host of the John Fredericks radio show. He wrote this for InsideSources.com. President Donald Trump returned to office a year ago with four clear priorities: secure the border, lower costs for working-class Americans, restore economic growth, and put good-paying American jobs first. As he prepares to deliver his State of the Union address, measurable results are undeniable, and the second phase is already forming. First is his success at the border. Through executive enforcement, reinstated deterrence policies, expanded border patrol deployment, and tighter interior enforcement, illegal crossings have fallen to 6,500 in December, compared to the surge of 249,700 in December of 2023. The contrast is stark. Under President Joe Biden, mass illegal entry overwhelmed border communities and interior cities. Trump reversed course in a matter of months, using executive authority and enforcement discipline. Remember the argument that only sweeping legislation, including amnesty, could fix the crisis? Trump's first year has proven otherwise. Cartel leverage has weakened. Smuggling routes were disrupted. Sanctuary loopholes have narrowed. The incentive structure has changed. Communities along the southern border report relief from the daily strain of mass crossings. Law enforcement is no longer diverted by the crisis levels of the past. For American workers, labor market pressure from unchecked illegal immigration has eased. Border policy shifted quickly because enforcement priorities shifted quickly. Second is the Trump RX program. The administration's prescription drug initiative emphasized price transparency, accelerated generic approvals, expanded competition, and regulatory pressure on pharmacy benefit middlemen who have long operated in opaque pricing systems. The results are showing up in insulin pricing, brand name drugs, and common maintenance medications. Seniors on fixed incomes should see lower out-of-pocket costs in several high-use categories. Rather than expanding federal control over health care, the administration relied on competition and leverage. Health care inflation remains a challenge, but Trump is moving prices in the right direction. Public health policy also has moved decisively. Under the Make America Healthy Again initiative, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has targeted ultra-processed foods, aggressive marketing to children, and labeling practices that obscure nutritional content. Childhood obesity and early-onset diabetes have become central concerns. The administration has pushed transparency standards, reformation incentives, and stronger nutritional guidelines in federally supported programs. The objective is not prohibition. It is accountability and informed choice that reduce long-term chronic disease. Then there's the James Carville standard. It's the economy, stupid. The one big beautiful bill reshaped the tax structure for working Americans. It eliminates federal taxes on tips, overtime pay, and portions of Social Security income. And it expands small business expensing. The effect is direct. Service workers keep more of what they earn. Tradespeople working overtime see immediate benefit. Retirees experience lighter tax exposure. Small businesses can reinvest in hiring, equipment, and expansion. Labor participation has strengthened. Domestic energy production is helping manufacturing and transportation. The governing formula is straightforward: lower tax burdens on work, reduce regulatory friction, prioritize domestic production, and allow private capital to move. Americans enjoy more disposable income and fewer barriers to job creation. Trump campaigned on results. He delivered and is now on the cusp of an economic explosion. The Dow Jones Industrial Average hit 50,000 and the U.S. has strong growth. The direction of America is unmistakable. Year one of Trump's second term delivered structural change. Year two is positioned to test how far and how fast the resurgence can run. Fasten your seatbelts, folks. The boom phase is coming to a main street near you. Did someone say midterms? We'll read a second opinion on this topic, Trump's second act, in the second half hour of our reading of the paper today. From our sports page, Colleen Kane, Julia Poe, Chicago Tribune. Basketball. Underwood. UCLA loss burns my rear end. Illinois coach Brad Underwood hopes one good thing will come out of the stunning 95-94 overtime loss to UCLA on Saturday. That the number 10 Illini wake up to what will happen if they're not on their details in the weeks ahead. When is enough enough? Underwood asked reporters after the game. Enough is enough. You do this in 2 weeks and you go home. It's a tough loss. But the only one that gets much tougher than this is the one that happens in the NCAA tournament, and then your season is over. That's what we have to take from this. Illinois led by 23 points in the first half before UCLA fought back to send the game to overtime. Donovan Dent drove the length of the floor for the winning layup as time expired. Underwood lamented missed free throws and defensive rebounds that have cost Illinois in some of its 6 losses. The Illini have lost 3 of their last 5 games, all in overtime. Their next test doesn't get any easier, Friday against number 3 Michigan. We're right there, Underwood said. We're as good as anybody in the country. I'm pissed off we didn't get a freaking defensive rebound. That's the toughest stuff you have to win. You lose a game because we don't get a darn defensive rebound against a team that's hungry. We're plenty good enough. We can't do anything about the injuries and the losses we have when we haven't been whole. But the missed free throws and the defensive rebounding, that's the stuff that just burns my rear end. Michigan enters the final 2 weeks of the regular season with the Big Ten title in reach. The Wolverines, 25-2, 15-1, need to win 2 of their final 4 conference games to win the title outright. They can clinch a share Tuesday against Minnesota, and if they win that one, they can claim the outright championship Friday night in Champaign. Michigan, which has only lost to Wisconsin and Duke this season, plays at Iowa and hosts number 13 Michigan State in its final 2 games. With their overtime loss to UCLA, the Illini, 22-6, 13-4, made it significantly more difficult to claim a share of the title with just 3 games left. They would have to win out and would need Michigan to lose 3 games. After Michigan, Illinois hosts Oregon and plays at Maryland. Michigan State, number 12 Nebraska, and number 8 Purdue all enter the week with 12-4 conference records. The number 2 UCLA women claim the outright Big Ten regular season title Sunday, with a win over Wisconsin to improve to 27-1, 17-0. The women head to the conference tournament next week in Indianapolis. And in professional sports, after nearly 5 months, Chicago Sky forward Angel Reese returned to the basketball court last weekend to participate in one of the final weeks of the unrivaled regular season. Reese was a surprise late addition to Rose BC for a truncated outing in the 3-on-3 league. She made her debut in a loss to Hive BC, tallying 13 points and 8 rebounds in just under 11 minutes. Reese logged a longer stint in Sunday's win over Laces BC, posting 9 points and 15 rebounds in nearly 18 minutes. She came off the bench in both cases. It was the first time Reese has played competitive basketball since September 3rd when she played her last minutes of the 25 WNBA season before being shut down because of a back injury. Despite being a member of Unrivaled's inaugural season, Reese originally opted not to participate this season in part to preserve her health after suffering season-ending injuries in her first 2 years as a pro. Rose BC qualified for the first round of the Unrivaled playoffs with Sunday's win. If the team advances to the semifinals, Reese and her teammates would play March 2nd at Barclays Center in New York, a recently announced relocation that reflects the success of the league's Philadelphia games. The Bulls have successfully submerged themselves in the NBA standings with a 9-game losing streak that predates the trade deadline. Through Sunday, they were 1.5 games ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks for 9th in the draft lottery order, and only 1.5 games behind the Memphis Grizzlies. This repositioning has improved the Bulls' odds to land a top-4 pick to 20.3%. Andre Stojakovic, was right there. All we were trying to do was force him to veer or pass, and he just got by us. It's one of those situations. It's hard because you don't want to foul there. We knew the back screen was coming. We talked about it in the timeout. We had seen the play, but letting him get all the way to the rim was not on the game plan. Brad Underwood on UCLA guard Donovan Dent's full court drive in overtime to beat Illinois. Dent got through the Illini press, around a screen, and blew by all five defenders for the layup. Our food page, B5, is cooking with cottage cheese. Three tasty ways to add a dollop of extra protein to breakfast, lunch, and dinner. For breakfast, we have a recipe for cottage cheese pancakes. These high-protein, low-fat cottage cheese pancakes are made with just a few simple ingredients, cook up fluffy, and actually taste good. If it sounds too good to be true, I assure you it's not. The crisp edges, soft, tender center, and wholesome, subtly sweet flavor make them worth waking up 15 minutes earlier on a weekday to whip up a batch. Enjoy them with a drizzle of maple syrup, switch it up with a dollop of fruit jam, or go for another boost of protein with some Greek yogurt and fresh fruit. For lunch or dinner, high-protein tomato soup. Few things are more comforting to me than a warm bowl of soup. Creamy tomato soup is a classic, and when you pair it with grilled cheese, it's like a hug and a meal. When I don't want to turn to a canned option, a recipe I found on TikTok does the trick. This quick and easy soup recipe requires just three ingredients, a cup of marinara sauce, a cup of cottage cheese, and a cup of broth. To make, simply add the ingredients to a blender, blitz them together until smooth, then pour the mixture into a saucepan and heat it over medium heat for 5 to 10 minutes, stirring occasionally. Finally, pour the soup into a bowl and serve it up with whatever you like. It took me about 10 minutes from start to finish. And last, a cottage cheese twice-baked potato. Inspired by Martha Stewart's baked potatoes, she touted them as being perfectly fluffy, so naturally I had to try out the recipe for myself. The recipe starts with Martha Stewart's baked potato cooking method. Take a couple of Yukon Gold potatoes, or as many as you'd like to make, and bake directly on the rack of a 325 oven for 90 minutes. Once the potatoes are done, split them down the middle and mash the inside of the potato with a fork. Be sure to leave the skin intact. To each potato, add a spoonful of cottage cheese, a sprinkle of cheddar cheese, some chopped chives, and pepper to taste. Mix it all together and push it back into the potato skin so everything is compact. Finally, sprinkle some more cheddar cheese on top and bake for another 20 to 25 minutes. Top with more chives and enjoy. The interior is super fluffy, and the cottage cheese and cheddar cheese add a delicious salty bite that, when combined with the chives, results in a sour cream and onion vibe. The potato skin on the outside provides a slightly crispy chew. If you're not the biggest fan of cottage cheese, you can't really tell aside from the visual look. Its texture is masked by the light and fluffy potato interior. You can also swap out the chives for rosemary or throw in some bacon bits. And watch the cooking time. 90 minutes may be too much or too little, depending on the size of the potatoes. For a complete list of ingredients and instructions on the recipes, please see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review today. Now from our national and world news page. From the Pentagon, Hegseth warns company. Secretary threatens to cancel contract without unrestricted use of AI. From the Associated Press in Washington, D.C., Matt O'Brien, Konstantin Toropin, and David Klepper. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth gave Anthropic CEO a Friday deadline to open the company's artificial intelligence technology for unrestricted military use or risk losing its government contract, according to a person familiar with their meeting Tuesday. Anthropic makes the chatbot Claude and is the last of its peers to deny use of its technology for a new U.S. military internal network. CEO Dario Amaude repeatedly made clear his ethical concerns about unchecked government use of AI, including the dangers of fully autonomous armed drones and of AI-assisted mass surveillance that could track dissent. Defense officials warned they could designate Anthropic a supply chain risk or use the Defense Production Act to essentially give the military more authority to use its products even if it doesn't approve of how they are used, according to the person familiar with the meeting and a senior Pentagon official, who both spoke on condition of anonymity. The development, which was reported by Axios, underscores the debate over AI's role in national security and concerns about how the technology could be used in high-stakes situations involving lethal force, sensitive information, or government surveillance. It also comes as Hegseth has vowed to root out what he calls a woke culture in the armed forces. A powerful AI, looking across billions of conversations from millions of people, could gauge public sentiment, detect pockets of disloyalty forming, and stamp them out before they grow, Amadei wrote in an essay last month. The person familiar called the tone of the meeting cordial, but said Amadei didn't budge on two areas he established his lines Anthropic won't cross: fully autonomous military targeting operations and domestic surveillance of U.S. citizens. The Pentagon objects to Anthropic's ethical restrictions because military operations need tools that don't come with built-in limitations, the senior Pentagon official said. The official claimed the Pentagon has only issued lawful orders and stressed that using Anthropic's tools legally would be the military's responsibility. Anthropic is the only AI company approved for classified military networks. The Pentagon announced last summer that it was awarding defense contracts to four AI companies: Anthropic, Google, OpenAI, and Elon Musk's xAI. Each contract is worth up to $200 million. From the Associated Press in Washington, Supreme Court rules the USPS can't be sued. Woman says her mail was intentionally withheld for 2 years. A divided Supreme Court on Tuesday ruled that Americans can't sue the U.S. Postal Service, even when employees deliberately refuse to deliver mail. By a 5-4 vote, the justices ruled against a Texas landlord, Labine Conan, who alleges her mail was intentionally withheld for 2 years. Conan, who is black, claims racial prejudice played a role in postal employees' actions. Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for a majority of five conservative justices, said the federal law that generally shields the Postal Service from lawsuits over missing, lost, and undelivered mail includes the intentional non-delivery of mail. In dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote that while the protection against lawsuits is broad, it does not extend to situations when the decision not to deliver mail was driven by malicious reasons. Justice Neil Gorsuch joined his three liberal colleagues in dissent. President Donald Trump's Republican administration said a ruling for Conan would have led to a flood of similar lawsuits against the cash-strapped Postal Service. Now from Josh Funk, Associated Press. House rejects aircraft locator bill. Legislation aimed to prevent collisions like last year's in D.C. The House failed to approve a bill Tuesday that was crafted after last year's mid-air collision near Washington, D.C., to require all aircraft flying around busy airports to have key locator systems to prevent such crashes. The collision of an airliner and an Army helicopter killed 67 people in January 25. The National Transportation Safety Board recommended such automatic dependent surveillance broadcast systems to be installed since 2008. The bill that already passed the Senate would have required aircraft to be equipped with a system that can receive data about the locations of other aircraft. The complementary ADS-B out system that broadcasts an aircraft's location is already required. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chairman Sam Graves pledged to continue working with the families and the Senate to address the aviation safety concerns exposed by last year's collision. He said the House bill could be marked up in committee as soon as next week. That bill is designed to address all 50 of the recommendations the NTSB made, not just the locator technology, but NTSB Chairwoman Jennifer Homendy said the House bill falls short of accomplishing that. Homendy testified in Congress that American Airlines was able to equip more than 300 of its Airbus A321s for $50,000 each, and general aviation pilots have the option of using a portable receiver that costs about $400 and works with an iPad. Briefly, national news from London. The British government will release confidential papers related to the former Prince Andrew's appointment as trade envoy after a parliamentary debate in which lawmakers called for greater accountability from the royal family. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, February 25th. Please stay with us.